So the next speaker is Celeste Falcon at the University of Minnesota, and she's going to speak on haplotype diversity at a grain protein content QTL identified in 2- and 6-row barley germplasm. Good.
So good morning, everyone. Thank you for the introduction. The research results I'm presenting here are on just a part of my project, focusing on haplotype diversity at this QTL that I've identified for grain protein content. So really this project stems out of a wider project where I'm using association mapping to identify QTL that affect nitrogen use efficiency in barley. So this is a really important trait, of course. We know that it reduces the use and overuse of nitrogen fertilizer. Particularly, we know that producers can have lower input costs if they don't need to apply so much nitrogen to their crops. We also can see reduced ecosystem damage. If plants take up the nitrogen better from the soil, there's not so much left to leach into our waterways. And then the third point refers to a study that showed that various plants, including small grains, have a more difficult time uptaking nitrates when there's increased CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, like we would see with global climate change. And so hopefully by breeding for NUE, we could combat that effect. And really, the group I work in works on malting barley, and when we talk about nitrogen use efficiency for this crop, we really need to aim for increased yields with less nitrogen applied while maintaining protein levels in the grain that are appropriate for malting and brewing industry. So to get right into this project, I looked at two panels of lines. The first panel consisted of about 250 two-row barley lines, and the other panel consisted of about 250 six-row barley breeding lines. If you're not very familiar with barley, just know that two-row and six-row barleys are different types that form different subpopulations, and they have really different breeding histories. So each of these panels was tested in 4 environments, as you can see on the map. At each location, we used an unreplicated design and then 5 replicated checks, and there were 2 treatments at each environment. So in one treatment, a normal amount of nitrogen was applied so that the plants were not stressed. And then in the other treatment, a lower amount of nitrogen was applied so that the plants were under nitrogen stress. And it depended on each location to see how much nitrogen was appropriate for their soil conditions and everything. As far as data collection, we collected phenotypic data on a number of traits. So in both panels, we collected data on grain protein concentration, grain yield, heading date and plant height, test weight, and grain plumpness. And then in just the 6-row panel of lines, we also collected data on spikes per meter, kernels per spike, and 1,000 kernel weight. And then as far as genotypic data, all of these lines had been genotyped with 3,072 SNP markers previously. So my first question became how I would quantify nitrogen use efficiency in this project. A lot of other projects that are looking at NUE tend to measure the amount of nitrogen or protein in the vegetative tissues versus the amount of nitrogen or protein in reproductive tissues or the grain, but those weren't the types of measurements we were making. So looking into the literature, I found that there's a number of stress indices that you can calculate where you're comparing trait values under the normal setting, the unstressed setting, versus your trait values in the stress setting. So first, I calculated these for each trait and looked at whether there was genetic variation for the calculation. And I found that overall, for percent difference and the stress susceptibility index, there really wasn't genetic variation for the traits I was looking at. And then I compared these two others, geometric mean and stress tolerance index. And I found that the results for the QTL study based on these are really similar. So I'll just be presenting on the geometric mean in this presentation. And really, this calculation is just comparing a multiplication of the trait value under normal nitrogen times the trait value under low nitrogen and taking the square root. So a higher value for geometric mean means that the plant is not only able to achieve higher yield under the normal nitrogen setting, but also under that stress setting, meaning that it is nitrogen use efficient. So then I moved on to my association mapping analysis, and just to give you some idea of how I conducted this, I was using the R blood package in R, and I also compared results from GAPIT. They were very similar, so I went forest with just R blood. I used the fixed effect to model environment as a way of combining my data across all of those environments, and I use a K-model to account for relatedness among the lines in the panels. So I analyze the two panels completely separately. Like I said, these have very different breeding history, and there have been previous studies that show that it's most appropriate to not pool these lines together when you're looking for QTL through association mapping. And then to set a p-value significance threshold for my association results, I use the simple M method, which approximates permutation testing but is a lot less computationally intensive. So overall, these are my association mapping results for the 9 traits that I looked at. There's a lot going on in this slide, but you'll see that the results for 2-row barley are on the left and 6-row barley are on the right. And then each triplet of bars is representing one chromosome of barley. And the first bar is representing the low nitrogen setting. The middle bar is the normal nitrogen setting. And then the last bar is for the geometric mean calculation. So if we see a bar that goes all the way across all three, then that association was detected in each of those settings and for the index. So if we look closely at these, there's about 25 associations in the 2-row barley panel and 34 in the 6-row barley panel. And among all of those associations, there's only this one that I have circled that overlaps between the two subpopulations. And so this is the 6H QTL for grain protein content. And it turns out that this locus is well known. So it had been detected previously in a biparental population in 2002. And then further work showed that this locus is collinear with the GPCB1 locus in wheat, which you can see in this figure. And the GPCB1 locus had been cloned previously, and it had been determined to be a transcription factor. And then on top of that, there's been many studies that show that these loci affect not only grain protein content, but also grain yield, grain weight, protein yield, leaf senescence, and plant development. And really knowing that this QTL can affect the leaf senescence is what makes us think that this could be a gene that's important to not only grain protein content, but also nitrogen use efficiency. So somehow this gene is interacting to affect the way that the plant remobilizes nitrogen from its vegetative tissue into the kernels, which is an important part of nitrogen use efficiency. The lab group I work in had also done a bit of work on this locus previously. So we had developed these two near isogenic lines for the 6H QTL. So the first line is the KLBC4 line, and here we have introgressed a low protein allele for this QTL from a line called Carl into the background of another line called Lacey. And then we have the Gen 236 line where we've introgressed a high protein allele from the variety Chevron into the background of Lacey. And I use these near isogenic lines as some of my replicated checks in the 6-row panel trials. So what I wanted to look at here was haplotypes at this QTL. And to do this, I used 4 of the markers that were significantly associated with grain protein content at this locus to define the haplotypes. And then I classified all of the lines from each panel into haplotype classes depending on which of the haplotypes they had. And then I used a simple HSD test to determine whether there were significant differences among those haplotype classes. So first, to show you, these were the different haplotypes. So these are the 4 markers that I used to define the haplotypes, and then it turns out that there are 4 haplotypes. The first I just called the other haplotype, and then the second is the haplotype that comes from the high protein near isogenic line, so it has that chevron allele. The next haplotype I call the mid haplotype, and it has the Lacey allele, and then the last one is the low haplotype. It has the Carl allele at this locus. So then we look at how those haplotypes are represented in the 2 panels and what the mean GPC for each of those classes is. So here you can see that in the 6-row barley panel, I identified all 4 of those haplotypes. The other and the high haplotypes were not significantly different for their mean grain protein content. And then the mid and low were each significantly different from the other and high and from one another. And we see here that the Gen 236 line has that high haplotype, and in fact, that haplotype class has the highest grain protein content, as we would expect. Similarly, in 2-row barley, we see that Harrington is a line that has the high haplotype at this locus, and or the class with that haplotype also has the highest grain protein content. Interestingly, in the 2-row barley, the mid and low haplotype classes don't have significantly different grain protein content. So I was looking more into why that could be. It could certainly be just the panel of lines we're looking at. There's certainly more lines than this that we could compare. But one thing that I saw right away is that we have this one shared locus for grain protein content in both panels. But in the 2-row panel, there's also another of other QTL that I identified. So those could also be affecting the overall grain protein content of those different haplotype classes. Another interesting thing we see is that the haplotype class means for grain yield are not significantly different in either panel. And it's important to know this because a lot of times grain protein content is negatively correlated with grain yield, and that can be a problem for breeders that are trying to achieve both. But we don't see that, at least for this locus. So to summarize, some of the key points here are that there really are different genetic architectures between these two panels. And so it's important that we consider them separately when we're doing genetic studies. But it also gives us this potential to exploit QTL or alleles from one population when we're breeding for the other population. I've also confirmed previous studies results that this locus affects GPC, of course, but does not affect grain yield. And then we also see that there's certainly an allelic series at this locus, and it's important to choose the best allele depending on what our breeding program targets are. So with that, I'll acknowledge several people, my committee members at the U of M, especially my advisor, Dr. Kevin Smith, all members of the Barley Project, past and present at the U of M, and then I have a number of collaborators. This project is part of the Tridacy CAP, and so we had a number of collaborators collecting phenotypic and genotypic data for us. Besides being funded through the TCAP project, which is a USDA project, I've also been funded by 2 fellowships at the U of M. With that, I thank you all for listening, and I take any questions. Okay. There's one back there. Can you repeat that, please? The size of the haplotype block. So the way I've been defining it so far, it goes from about 49 centimorgans to about 60 centimorgans, which is a pretty large area, but that is about the size of the area of the chromosome that's in high LD. And I've done that through looking at LD in HaploView and then also doing a method called paired haplotype sharing. Thank you so much.